James talks about the kind of speech we need to put off. He says, don't speak evil against one another, because if you do that, you're acting like God, and you get to be the judge of your neighbor. And Jesus says in Matthew 7, don't judge, and he means don't be hypercritical. And a lot of gossip comes really from thinking we have the right to be other people's judge and from being hypercritical. And so we need to put that off, and what do we need to put on in its place? A charitable spirit. 1 Corinthians chapter 13 says, love believes the best. But obviously, even when you're being charitable, people are still going to be doing things that are wrong. And not just wrong according to your opinion, but objectively wrong and unhelpful. So what do we do then? When we're not just seeing the speck, we are not just being someone's judge, we're not just being hypercritical, they're doing something wrong. What do we do? And we talked about a couple different options last week. We said we could pray, we should always do that. We can overlook sometimes, and sometimes we need to correct. We actually need to go to them, and we need to correct. But that is hard for a lot of us, hard for a lot of us. And for a lot of different reasons. That's sometimes partly why we gossip. We don't want to talk to the person. That's too difficult. And sometimes even our culture will give us reasons why we can't talk to the person. But we do want to talk about the issue, and so we choose what we think is the easier route. Instead of giving correction, we gossip, which is sad. It's sad for them, because we are really spreading negative information about them and also keeping them from really the opportunity to change, and it's sad for us. Because we are not using our speech in a way that glorifies God and is good for others. And we're really kind of preaching negative things to ourselves and to others. And so if we're going to communicate in a way that honors God and is helpful to others, one of the things we want to stop is gossiping. And what we want to learn how to do is to give correction well, which is pretty rare to give correction well. And yet really should be something we as a church are good at. And so I want us to just think about that this evening. How do we give correction well? What does the Bible have to say about giving correction to someone else? And we're going to look at the book of Proverbs, so you can just open up to the book of Proverbs, which is a book written to give us wisdom. And we're going to look a few other places, but mostly Proverbs. And we're going to talk about three keys from Proverbs to giving correction well. So I don't know who here is really good at giving correction. Probably most of us would be like, no, I'm not good at it. So Proverbs teaches us how to give correction. And one of the first things it tells us is that we need to give correction for the right reasons. So if we're going to give correction well, we need to give correction for the right reasons. And so sometimes it seems like when it comes to correcting people, there are two kinds of people. So there are, I'm just making this part up, but it seems like it in life. There are people who love telling others what to do, and then there are people who hate telling others what to do. And both are usually a little bit wrong, because giving correction is not really about what I like or don't like. It's about something much bigger than that. And so first thing that it's about, the right reason to give correction, it's about obeying God. It's about obeying God. So why would I correct someone else? Not because I like it, not because I don't like it, but because I want to be obedient to God. And when we look at Proverbs, Proverbs is a book of wisdom. So it's not really, not a lot of commands in Proverbs. But there are a number of descriptions of the kind of person who is righteous, so the kind of person who's obeying God. And Proverbs talks about the righteous person so that we would know what it looks like to be obedient to God. And one of the things that the book of Proverbs tells us about the righteous person is that he is a person who talks, who teaches other people how to do what God wants. And so you can't really be a righteous person without talking. Right, part of being a righteous person is speaking truth into other people's lives. And there are lots of different proverbs that illustrate that, but one particular chapter that talks about that a lot is Proverbs chapter 10. In Proverbs chapter 10, there are a number of examples of what it looks like to be a righteous person. For starters, Proverbs 10:11 says, "The mouth of the righteous is a fountain of life, but the mouth of the wicked conceals violence." And so there's an image in that verse. What's the image that's in that verse? A fountain. Yeah, a fountain, not of water, but of life. And water, a fountain in a dry place, is obviously a big deal. So, you know, Israel was a pretty dry place. And that's why Abraham's always talking about wells. You know, there's all this importance of wells, because it was dry. You survived if you had a well. And so you find a fountain, there's life there, and there's hope. And one of the characteristics of a righteous person is the way that he communicates. There's life there. And what does he say gives life like this? It's the mouth of a righteous person. The mouth of a righteous person is the fountain of life. Proverbs 10:13. "On the lips of him who has understanding, wisdom is found, but a rod is for the back of him who lacks sense." So it's the wisdom that comes out that makes the way the righteous person communicates so life-giving. So why is his mouth a fountain of life? It's because you go to his mouth, the way he speaks, and he is speaking wisdom into your life. Proverbs chapter 10, verses 20 and 21 puts it like this. "The tongue of the righteous is choice silver. The heart of the wicked is of little worth. The lips of the righteous feed many, but fools die for lack of sense." So a righteous person is known for the way he speaks. And what is it that makes his words so valuable? It's because the lips of the righteous feed many. And some would translate that, the lips of the righteous shepherd many. So his words lead people in the right direction, lead people to green pastures, maybe you could say. How do they do that? Proverbs 10, verse 31, "The mouth of the righteous brings forth wisdom, but the perverse tongue will be cut off." So again, they feed many, shepherd many, the mouth of the righteous, by bringing forth wisdom. In other words, a righteous person is someone you can go to who can teach you how to apply Scripture to your life. And this is something you see again and again throughout Proverbs. Proverbs 13:14, if we just turn forward a couple more chapters, puts it like this. "The teaching of the wise is a fountain of life, that one may turn from the snares of death." And so what's the threat there? The snares of death. And so one of the marks of a righteous person is he's concerned about others. And so if we're concerned about others, we're going to want them to escape the snares of death. And how do they escape the snares of death? It's through what the righteous person says. The righteous person is able to communicate in a way that keeps people safe. They don't just kind of sit there living their own life. They speak truth into other people's lives, and sometimes doing that will require us actually getting into their life and showing them where they need to change. So that's part of it. Proverbs 19:25 says it like this. Proverbs 19:25. "Strike a scoffer, and the simple will learn prudence. Reprove a man of understanding, and he will gain knowledge." And that's not a command, but it's almost as direct a command as you could find in Proverbs. I know that I wish, so my temperament, I wish that I could, in my ideal world, I would never have to say anything negative. So I wish that all of my instruction could be positive. But it isn't. If that's the only kind of instruction we gave to children, positive, never corrective, where would our kids end up if we didn't tell them where they were wrong and then discipline them? Then they would end up as fools. And even when we grow up, we need positive instruction, but we also need corrective instruction. The Bible calls us to this, to to see sin and to be willing to correct it. And it should be something that happens in our relationships with other people. If we're going to be obedient to God and if we're going to be righteous, we're going to need to be willing to correct. And that's not just Proverbs. If we go to the New Testament, Matthew 18, Galatians chapter 6, make it really clear that we have to be willing to do this. And so what are we talking about? We're not talking about thinking you're smarter than others. We're not talking about just having a lot of opinions that you want to share. That's not what should motivate us to correct others. The first right motivation for correcting others is I need to share this because I want to obey God. And this is really about me being obedient. The second motivation, the second reason we correct is because we love others, which I need to hear, because sometimes I will say I'm not correcting someone because I love them. And I don't want to hurt them. But sometimes, a lot of times, the reason is because I actually love me, the reason I'm not correcting. We definitely don't want to think of correction as something we only do when we're annoyed by someone or when we finally get so frustrated that we want to speak up. We have to speak up. But instead, we want to correct others because we actually care about them, and we know that correcting is one way we can show love to them. And so hopefully your love language isn't correction, but it certainly is a way of showing correction. And to prove that, we can just think about it's a way of showing love. Correction is a way of showing love. And to prove that, we can think about the way God deals with us. Proverbs chapter 3, verses 11 and 12. Proverbs 3, 11 and 12 says this: "My son, do not despise the Lord's discipline or be weary of his reproof, for the Lord reproves him whom he loves as a father, the son in whom he delights." And so who does God reprove? Who does he rebuke? The Lord reproves the one he loves. And because of that, we shouldn't get tired of his correcting us. It actually says the Lord's like a father who, the way he corrects the son he delights. So one way a father shows how much he loves his son is by being willing to correct him. I remember when my dad used to spank me when I was a child, he would always go through this whole long process. You know, he was a biblical counselor, so it was not just like a spanking. We'd have to go into the bathroom, and then we'd have to sit down, and he'd have to have all this talk about why are we here, what happened, what is the reason why I'm correcting you right now, what you know biblical principle is this violating, all that, and then why am I doing this, and you know he would always, it's because I love you so much, I'm spanking you now because I love you. And I remember one time when I was little, or at least my mom tells me, I was saying, "Dad, why do you have to love me so much? I would prefer a little less love." But it was true. We always went out hugging, and I was thankful for the correction in the end. But we sometimes get frustrated with God because we want him to let us go our own way, and that's how a lot of people think of love. Letting someone do whatever they want to do. But obviously it's not, because there's a lot that we want to do that will harm us if we do it. And God's not the kind of father who is going to look on as we harm ourselves, because he cares about us. And so he's willing to correct us. And Solomon goes on to say in Proverbs, that's not just true for God. Human fathers should model themselves after God and love their children in a similar way. Proverbs 13:24, he says, "Whoever spares the rod hates his son, but he who loves him is diligent to correct him." So I think my dad probably had me memorize that verse. Whoever spares the rod hates his son. You don't want me to hate you. But it's true. In the real world, choices have consequences, and sin is painful. And so obviously if you love someone, you want to protect them from those consequences. And one of the ways you do that is by teaching them that sin is painful, and not allowing them to grow up in a fairy tale world. And that's really why, however you discipline, You want there to be pain, some kind of pain involved, because you want your children to learn to connect in their minds sin with pain, because that's reality. And why it's nice to learn it in the home, where it's not quite as painful as it will be out in the real world. And that's why, that principle is why Solomon says later in Proverbs 27, 5 and 6, he says, "Better is open rebuke than hidden love. Faithful are the wounds of a friend. Profuse are the kisses of an enemy." And so a friend, like a father, like God, is someone who loves us enough to wound us if necessary. And that's not the way that everybody always thinks of it. I personally like people telling me what I want to hear. But really, love that isn't willing to step out and show someone when they're wrong and need to change isn't a very helpful kind of love. And the point is, when you're correcting others, it should be because you're for them. So if we're going to correct others well, it needs to be for the right reason. And the reason we should correct others is because we want to be obedient to God, be righteous. Righteous people, their mouth is a fountain of life, of wisdom, and because we know that this is a way to care for them. Sometimes in the world, it's not like that. People are correcting you because they just want you to do what they want, or they just want their life to be more comfortable. But biblically, in the church, that's not the way it should be. It should be because we want the best for people. And so we should be totally willing to overlook what's happening if it's just about me and you. But if it's not just about me and you, if it's really about what's good for you, we're going to be willing to do the hard work of getting in there and helping them change. And one of the ways we demonstrate that is when we go to instruct someone or correct someone, we're not just going in there and telling them they're wrong and that they need to stop and then leaving them. We're also willing to stay in there and work with them if they repent so they can be truly transformed or restored. So that's one of the sad things that sometimes can happen. It's like a church does all the work to correct someone when they see they're in sin, but then it's just like they're gone. You know, like, I did my job, I corrected you, and now it's going to be so messy to actually help you change because it's really hard. So, but I corrected you. But if you're willing to correct someone, if you love them enough to correct them, you should be willing to love them enough to hang in there with them in the middle of the mess until they change. I think if you feel like you have the responsibility to correct someone, you should feel the same kind of responsibility to express love and help them after you've confronted them. So to give correction well, we need to do it for the right reasons. That's first. And we need to ask ourselves, am I doing this because it's biblical? And I want to obey God, and am I doing this because it's loving? Second, to give correction well, we need to make sure we're giving correction at the right time. The right reasons, the right time. And some of us sort of feel like if I have something to say, then it's always appropriate to say it. But that's not biblical, actually. It's not always appropriate to say it. We don't need to correct each other about everything. And it's not helpful to correct everyone about everything. What's more, there are times when we do need to correct someone about something, but the moment for addressing that isn't right, and we should wait and address the issue later. So Ephesians, we're going to focus on Proverbs, but Ephesians makes that point so clearly. Paul says, Ephesians 4:29, "Let no corrupting talk come out of your mouth, but only such as is good for building up as fits the occasion." And you could kind of circle in your mind, as fits the occasion. So it could be the right word, but it doesn't fit the occasion. It's not the right time. And so it's not helpful at all. When it comes to giving correction well, we need to think about why we should correct, but we also need to think about when we should correct. Because there would be times where it's more helpful to overlook a mistake than it would be to make an issue out of it. So it's not just like an automatic that you say something every time you think someone's not doing something the way that they should. And there are a lot of proverbs that indicate we need to think carefully about this. It's kind of funny being in different cultures, so this is just for free and not from the Bible, but like I wonder, like if Americans don't typically struggle, many Americans, not everybody, and so this is why it's not helpful, but we'll just say it and then you can be like, ah, that's dumb, whatever. But I wonder sometimes if Americans struggle a little with flattery. We really have a hard time speaking straight and correcting and easily offended when other people do correct us. And if other cultures sometimes struggle with not realizing that, like, you don't have to correct about everything. Like, it's okay sometimes just to be nice or just to overlook things that we don't have to correct about everything. We've had lots of people in our homes and just noticing, like, the difference between Germans. Just something as, this is so for free and not in my notes, but even something as simple as, like, learning a language. So this isn't fair to talk about all Americans, so I'll talk about myself. But, like, when we were learning Afrikaans, one of the things the Afrikaans would do when we would speak their language is they would often laugh. And so that laughter was tough for me because it felt like they were belittling me and my attempts. Now, they clearly would say they were not doing that at all. They just were enjoying at my expense. That's how it felt. But Germans would come into our home often to learn English, and they would say a lot of things wrong, and I would just not say anything. And it would really frustrate them because they're like, you need to tell me if I'm pronouncing this word wrong. And I'm like, why would I need to tell you? I understood what you said. So, like, what does it matter? Like, a lot of people that say different things different. But they really wanted me to correct them at every point. So people, different cultures train us to think differently about correction. And what we're saying here is we want to go to the Bible and allow it to teach us about correction. When I go to the Bible, I see that I need to give correction for the right reasons and at the right time. Proverbs tells us that even. Proverbs 26, 4 and 5. Again, this is a book of wisdom, so it's telling us we have to think. And this is what it says. It says, answer not a fool according to his folly, lest you be like him yourself. So he says, okay, sometimes what? You answer a fool, that's the wrong choice. you should not have corrected him. Otherwise, you're going to make a bigger mess. And you're just going to end up being a fool yourself. On the other hand, the next verse says, answer a fool according to his folly, lest he be wise in his own eyes. And there are some people who are kind of foolish who say, oh, see, the Bible has contradictions. It's like, you don't understand how the Bible works. This is a book of wisdom. And he's saying, Solomon's just saying, this is how life is. It's not every situation is the exact same. You're going to have to think, is this the time when I need to step in? Or is this the time when I need to be quiet? Proverbs 17:14 tells us, Solomon says, Proverbs 17:14, the beginning of strife is like letting out water, so quit before the quarrel breaks out. So here's a disagreement. There's a strife. There's a beginning of strife. It's the beginning of a problem, disagreement. And Solomon says there's sometimes where it's just better to quit. Let it quit before the quarrel breaks out. Just let it go. A couple chapters later, Proverbs 19:11 picks up this idea and explains further. It says, good sense makes one slow to anger, and it's his glory to overlook an offense. So the person who has good sense doesn't get flustered quickly and honors himself by overlooking an actual offense. Somebody's done something wrong, and it's more honorable to overlook it. And one of the differences between a wise person and a fool is that the wise person knows when it would be better just to be quiet. Proverbs 12:16. The vexation of a fool, the annoyance of a fool, is known at once, but the prudent ignores an insult. So every time the foolish person's concerned about how something's going, he has to say it every time he thinks it's not going well. The vexation of a fool is known at once. The moment he thinks, oh, I don't like this, it's not right, people have to know it. But the prudent person, the wise person who's able to look forward a little bit, think about life, knows, okay, this is not the time. We can say this more positively as well. It's amazing how much work sometimes it takes to do that in real life, to just wait and hold your tongue. Proverbs 15:23, to make an apt answer is a joy to a man, and a word in season, how good it is. And the point is, when we say something at the right time, it's the apt answer, it's a blessing. Like when we said it in the right moment, that's really an honor for us and does good to others. And so the question is, how do we know if this is something I need to correct, or if this is something that I should be patient about and kind of ignore? So how do we know if we have the timing right? And this is one that obviously requires real wisdom, because every situation is different. So wisdom, sometimes we always want a list, like, okay, tell me, okay, I look at this list, this is when I do it, this is when I don't do it. And life doesn't quite work like that. You need to learn the wisdom of applying biblical principles to real life. But here are two things you need to consider if you're going to know when to correct, when not to correct. First of all, you need to consider yourself. And we do that because Jesus says in Matthew 7, take the log out of your own eye before you take the speck out of someone else's. So think about what's driving you to correct. What is it that you are most bothered about? A lot of times, and that's really important, because a lot of times the issue we want to correct someone else in, the reason we're so good at seeing that as a problem is because we're making the same mistake ourselves. It's just so much harder to see it in them than it is ourselves. And that's why we need to be a little hard on ourselves, because we're great at justifying our behavior. And so we need to make sure we're not being soft on ourselves and hard on others, which is our tendency. Even when we think we're being hard on others, so often we're still being soft on ourselves. Bailey was telling me at Chick-fil-A the other day, there was some accident on the 90, or there was something on the 91. There was that big shutdown on the 91. And it was like a long time. That guy was getting chased. And one of the ladies who came into Chick-fil-A, nice, normal little lady, said, I wish they would just shoot the guy and have it be done with. And then Bailey, you know, she's like so shy, and she's like, her eyebrows raised, and the lady's like, I know, I'm a bad person. And so she's like, of course, she goes home and think, yeah, I'm being hard on myself. I know I'm a bad person. But she's not nearly being hard on herself enough to think that she would want a human being, she'd be willing to use her mouth to say a human being should die because it's making traffic bad. And so we need to think about ourselves as we go to correct others. Are we really bothered about this for the right biblical reason? If you're the kind of person who hates correcting, then maybe you need to watch out you don't give yourself too many excuses for not saying something. So that's what I tend to do. I can find about a billion different reasons not to correct somebody. And so I have to really watch out when I'm telling myself why not to correct, because whether I'm telling myself the truth. And then if you're the kind of person who's happy to correct, you probably should ask yourself, why do I feel the need to tell other people what to do? So consider yourself. Second, consider the issue. This is fundamental. And before you correct someone on something specific, there are two questions you can ask yourself about the issue. And the first one is, how important is this issue anyway? So is it a preference or is it a principle? We've talked about that. But if it's a principle, where in the Bible do you find the principle stated? I remember someone who was really, maybe I shouldn't go here, but they were really correcting their wife about interior design. And that's whatever, that's their family. But the way they were correcting about him interior design was basically like, it's a principle. And you can really work hard, and we all get it. Like, there are principles involved in interior design. But, I mean, And you can find some Bible verses, maybe, but when you go to correct someone, one of the things you want to think about, is this really, yeah, a pretty clear, direct principle that that I'm talking to them about? Or is it a preference, or is it like a preference principle? Like it's a preference that flows out of a principle. Is this maybe another way to say it? Is this an area the Bible speaks directly about, or is this an application that's a little more gray? And I'm not saying that you don't ever say anything about the gray areas, but if you know it's gray before you go in, then you're going to be careful not to speak as firmly or authoritatively as you would about a clear biblical principle. Or is it an issue that you don't think is gray, but that other people might think is gray, and it's a little bit, you're going to need to do a little bit instruction, because they may not be disagreeing with you that they want to obey the Bible, but they just don't know what you think you know about the Bible. And so they're not really being rebellious. They just don't understand why it's as important as you are saying it is. So to keep going, you want to think about how important an issue is it? And you might ask yourself, how much harm is being done by what they're doing? So if you have a friend who thinks the last book of the Bible is Revelations instead of Revelation, you might say, I don't need to correct him about this, or at least I don't need to rebuke him about it, that's for sure. Unless he's your pastor or something like that, then definitely tell me. If someone's driving somewhere and they take a route you wouldn't take and you think it's going to take them 10 minutes longer if they go that way, you can think how much harm is being done really in those 10 minutes. That's not something that you normally have to go out of your way to correct at all. On the other hand, you've got this friend who's looking at pornography. You know the long-term damage of that. You can't just say, hey, what's the harm? So it's good for brothers, right? Good for brothers to think about, I'm correcting my little brother here. What is the harm in him thinking that Luka Doncic's number is 75, not 77. And there may be an occasion to help him know the right number, but am I the one to do it? Is this the time to do it? Another question, is what they're doing something that's going to cause a lot of unnecessary pain, or is it just going to be a difficulty that they need to learn from? So my mom would talk about fire versus swing issues, and swing issues are the ones where your child might fall off the swing, and they're not going to be seriously hurt, and so it might be good for you just to let them fall, because they're going to learn, oh, that doesn't work. But there are other times where they're about to stick their hand in a fire, and you can't let them do that, because it's going to cause too much damage. So there's a lot of talk now, not just from Christians, but from non-Christians, about how parents are so afraid for their kids all the time now. And so there's like really parents following their kids around so much all the time that they think they're trying to make their kids' life more safe, but they're actually producing kids that worry a lot more because the kids aren't being put in the positions where they are learning some of the things that you can really only learn through trial and error, and they end up just kind of scared of life. Another question is, what are they doing? Another question is, are they doing something that's going to cause a whole lot of unnecessary pain, or is it going to be just a difficulty that they'll learn from? Is it a habitual sin? Is it once and out of character? Is it something they're stuck in and they don't know it? If you're going to rebuke someone who just confessed his sin to you, that's strange. But people sometimes do that. Like the person will be like, you know what? I really just sinned. I didn't control my tongue when I spoke to you, and I was unkind. And then the other person will be like, that's so true. You were so unkind. I can't believe how unkind you were. Why were you that unkind? What they need for you is to help them and to forgive them. They don't need you to sit there and be like, you're so right. And what's more, let me tell you how bad it really was. Or say you notice someone who's seeming to have problems in their marriage and they come to you and they say, they're going to be a biblical counselor, and they tell you they're going to a biblical counselor for help, then you probably don't need to say to them, oh, yeah, I did notice you were a mess. But on the other hand, if a husband's treating his wife in a terrible way and you ask him, how do you think you're doing as a husband? And he says, yeah, I think I'm doing great. I'm awesome. Then you're probably going to need to step in and say, I'm not so sure about that. Maybe can we talk? Again, to keep going, is this something that really concerns the heart of the gospel? Or is it just more of a minor difference where there's no vital truth at stake? Sometimes we get really worked up on certain issues, but those issues are sort of our personal quirks. We're really big on it, but the fact is most godly people aren't. So I know there are a couple issues whenever somebody talks about, my ears perk up and I'm ready to jump in and correct. And sometimes that's okay, but other times I'm making an issue where I don't really need to make one. And sometimes you just need to ask too, like, what's the level of my relationship with this person? The tongue of the wise makes knowledge acceptable. So that means that it's possible to make knowledge harder for somebody to hear. So a foolish person is able to take something that's really true and make it hard for somebody to want to accept it. So I think I've told you before about how I was at a church where they were reformed and they loved the doctrine of election, and somebody would come in off the street who just became a Christian or just was finding out about the Bible, and they were kind of like, oh, can I tell you about the doctrine of election and reprobation or something like that? And it's like, oh, brother, you know, like there's a lot that they need to understand to be able to understand that truth. And so we want to understand that truth. But sometimes you might go into a kindergarten and do calculus, but rarely. You know, most of the time when you go into a kindergarten, you're like, hey, let's start with numbers, and then we'll get to calculus. But if you're just in there like doing calculus on the board every day with kindergartners, after a while, they're going to be like, I don't get this. This is frustrating, and throwing things at each other. And you're going to be like, but it's calculus. This is amazing. What's wrong with them? It's like, okay, that's true. But like there's, you know, a time and a place and things people need to know to be able to handle what you're saying. And so when you correct someone, you want to think about is this the right time? And you can do that by asking some of these questions. When you're trying to figure out whether you need to correct someone, look at the issue, ask how important is the issue, ask yourself, how sure am I about it? In other words, do I know I'm right? How important is the issue? How sure am I about it? What proof do I have that what I think is happening is really happening? So there are times when something's a really important issue, but you just have suspicions. And so you don't actually know for sure. And so you're not really in the position to correct then. You're in a position to investigate. You're in a position to ask questions. You're in a position to have a nice discussion. When you're discipling someone, you need to be careful at points where you know something's important, but you're lacking certain information about it, and you need to be careful about how much hardcore correcting you do or how you go about doing the correcting when you don't know. Like, you don't want to be one of those people who's always shouting where the Bible's whispering. There are times where something's not really important at all, and you don't know much about it. So it's not important, and it's not certain. Like, did George Washington ever wear orange socks? Who knows? Probably somebody, but who cares? And you're going to waste a lot of time if you do much correcting of people on stuff like that. And then, of course, there are times where you're really, really sure about something, but the issue isn't important at all. I don't know. The car I drove when I was 23 years old. I say it was a Nissan, and Marta says it was a Mazda. How important is it? It's hard for me to think how it could be important for me to correct her on that or for her to correct me on that. How is the relationship advanced and the other person encouraged by that? Now, all of this is really practical. How important is the issue? How sure am I? when it comes to correcting. I think I gave you, or maybe Marta has that little thing called Beaver's Grid to hand out, but that's a sort of a graphic way of explaining what I just was talking about. I don't know if I made enough, as always. But it's really helpful. I remember I having a concern with someone. I didn't think he was being loving. It was a pastor, and I didn't think he was being loving. And then I had to think, what proof do I have that he's not being loving? And I had a couple examples in my mind, and I got some counsel from others. And when we talked through the proof I had, some of them whom I respected saw things differently. They didn't think my proof was as certain as I did. And in that case, I submitted myself to their direction. I thought it was an important issue, but these godly men didn't think I had enough certainty to follow through. Other times, I've known people who were confronted about important issues, and you know the people who did the correcting never investigated what was happening. They acted as if they had more information than they did, and so they never stopped and considered, how sure are we about this, before they did the correcting, and they didn't even ask any questions of the person they were correcting, and that's foolish. And so what I'm trying to say is we have to give correction, but we want to try to reserve most of our correction for the kinds of issues that are of great importance and that we're dead certain about. Because long term, we will wear a lot of people out if we're consistently correcting them about issues in their life that don't matter or that we actually don't have good information about. And confuse them. Like, after a while, if someone's always correcting you, you begin by trusting them, and then later you realize, well, they didn't have enough information. They didn't really know what they were talking about. And so it's like, do I listen to this person when they come to correct me? Or you just exasperate them. There may be some people in the world that really like to be followed around, and you know, every time their shoelace is untied, they want somebody to tell them that it's untied, and then actually to tell them a better way of tying it, but not a lot of people. There's not a lot. That will wear a lot of people out and make it hard when you actually do have something that's important to say. Even as a dad, I try to, this is just something to think about. I try to not do a lot of correcting, so that when I do correcting, they know it's really significant. Or I at least like to vary the tone of how I correct about something that's significant from something that is not, so that they can know very obviously these are two different kinds of things that we're talking about. So to give correction well, we must learn to give correction for the right reasons, at the right time, and in the right manner. And I don't have a lot of time to work through this one, but like I said, the tongue of the wise makes knowledge acceptable. That's Proverbs 15:2. So there's a way to speak knowledge to someone else that makes it easier to hear, and there's a way to speak truth that makes it more difficult. And so what's the way? You have to think about what makes knowledge harder to hear. What are some things that can take something as beautiful as correction and make it ugly to someone else? And what are the kinds of things that can take correction and make it beautiful to someone else? And I'm sure there are lots of different ideas, but Paul tells us a couple important principles or elements in Galatians chapter 6, which I'm sure you're familiar with. But the first one he tells us is that we need to be gentle. The first one, brothers, if anyone's caught in any transgression, you who are spiritual should restore him in a spirit of gentleness. So when someone else has a problem that I feel like I need to address, that's an opportunity for me to pursue the humility that I need. Because if I'm going to address it well, I'm going to need to do it gently. Gentleness is humility in action. And so before you share the solution to someone's problem, slow down and seek to deal with your significant, most significant problem, which is going to be pride. And you can do that by committing yourself to say, I don't want to just say the right thing to them now. I want to approach them with the right attitude, one that's gentle and compassionate. And how do you do that? Here are a couple ideas. One, treat them like a person, not a project. So they're not just a problem to be fixed. They're a person to be loved and cared for. Two, don't speak to them as if they're stupid. We usually aren't very gentle with people we think aren't very smart. And so when you go to correct someone, instead of rushing in as a know-it-all, ask for their perspective, listen to what they think might be the solution, verbally acknowledge that they might have been thinking about the issue, encourage them that the reason you're sharing your concerns is not because you believe you're smarter than they are, but because you love them and you want to be of help to them. If you think all that is so obvious, a lot of times it's not obvious to people. If it's so obvious that it doesn't need to be said, it probably needs to be said twice. Three, before you speak, make doubly sure they know you've listened. So usually someone who's being corrected, it's very tempting for them to feel like you don't understand. And if they feel like you aren't willing to listen to their perspective, they're going to be very tempted not to listen to your perspective. And so you want to go to great lengths to make sure the person you're speaking to knows you have heard them. And that usually requires that you listen patiently without doing a lot of interrupting, which can be harder for some of us. I'm a classic interrupter. So especially once I think I know that, once I think somebody's repeating themselves, then it's very hard for me not, it's very tempting for me to lack self-control and just be like, okay, can we get to the next part of the conversation? Because I got that that's really hard for you. That's obviously, I need to realize that's not wise, because what's happening there as I'm doing that is I'm putting them in a tempting position to shut down or think that I just want to get through it or fix them. It's sometimes helpful, you know, to help somebody know that you've really heard them. It's helpful to say things like, I'm hearing you say that, dot, dot, dot. Am I hearing you correctly? And so what I often do, this is helpful for me, because what I often do when I listen to someone is I exaggerate what they said. So I'll be very tempted to put always in there, or I'll be very tempted to take, maybe they'll say something at this level, and it'll be tempting for me to put it up at this level. And so if I have to say, I'm hearing you say, and then I repeat back what they said, and I verbalize it at this level, well, one, that's not helpful for us in our relationship. If I'm saying they're talking like this, and they're really just saying it like this, that's not fair, I'm going to be tempted to be bitter or whatever. So that needs to be dealt with. And if I do that, then I can sometimes know, wow, I'm being an idiot here. Like just saying it out loud. It's like, wow, that is so unfair, because I know they didn't say that. Or maybe I really think they did say that, and they're like, oh my goodness. No, I literally just said, I meant, I just noticed this one time. And that's a big difference. Or you could say, I can hardly imagine how difficult it was for you to go through something like this. How did that make you feel? I love the word sorry, so for me, I think biblically too, sorry and please forgive me are two different things. So sorry is just like, if I say I feel sorry for you, I can say that about almost anything, as long as it's real, that I really do. I can only say please forgive me for stuff that's actually, I sinned. Otherwise, I'm minimizing, cheapening, please forgive me, and using it as like a manipulative tactic. But like, I can feel sorrow for a lot of stuff that you're going through, even if I don't think that I actually sinned in that instance. But you may feel like you're not doing anything when you sit there and listen, but you're showing concern for the person you're speaking to, and that means you're doing something big, because you're making it easier for them to hear you when you go to correct them. A couple other things: speak words that are biblically true in a manner that's biblically appropriate. Refuse to use your speech to tear others down. So it's good to remember that sometimes those sarcastic are pointed, little jokes are actually a coward's way of correcting and a lazy man's way of correcting too. So I have to think this, not everybody, it's not always the same and everybody's a little different. But sometimes what I'll be very tempted to do instead of actually addressing the issue or overlooking it is tell a little sort of snide joke so they know I don't like it and we don't have to go through the whole process of actually talking about why it's sin and how we should change and all of that. It's just a way of kind of doing something. So you want to be careful that what you're doing with your words is not tearing others down. Practice speaking in loving, gracious ways. Gentleness has a way of talking. It chooses certain words. And there's a language of gentleness. And so if you don't know it, you should maybe spend time with people that are known for being gentle and look at how they deal with others and watch and listen to how they talk and how they respond. There are people that the way they talk puts people further. They take almost two steps back. And then there are other people, by the way they talk, somehow people take two steps in. And that's a hard attitude, but it's also a skill. It's also a skill, and so you want to watch and learn from people who are able to do that. And then pray with people as you seek to talk to them about difficult issues. Maybe sometimes as it's getting difficult, you can just say, you know what? Obviously, I'm not doing a great job of this. Can we both just ask God? Can you ask God that He'll help me to not be a jerk? Help me to be loving. And can we pray that God will help us to hear each other? We should always do that. 8, work on helping the other person know that you love them. So when somebody's corrected, some people are used to being corrected. Other people aren't used to being corrected. Sometimes people are really insecure is not a great biblical word, but sometimes people, when somebody corrects them, they start thinking that means they're against them. And so you if you're going to go to correct somebody, it really makes sense to work at. A lot of times where it breaks down is they are not trusting you, and they think you've got something. Some weird is that you're not actually for them. And so you can't get in there and make them know that you're for them, but you can try. You know, you can really try to say whatever you can say to make it very clear that I've got your back. And if you think somebody's got your back, you can take a lot from that person generally. So the gentle person is not only telling somebody this is what you did wrong, he's also trying to tell them that he does love them, cares for them. And that can be awkward for some of us. But if you're going to correct somebody, we should, on a big issue, not like, oh, hey, you need to tie your shoe. I really love you. Please, I'm not saying that because you're bad at tying your shoes. And so for you, you know, that you could do that. But I'm talking about the bigger issues here. And then develop friendships with gentle people. Learn how, I said that already, but learn how they deal with others. So be gentle, seek to be gentle. I had a second key characteristic from here in Galatians chapter 6. That is, be willing to bear the person's burden that you're correcting. Be willing to suffer with someone so they can change. You don't want to be, sometimes people approach life like they're the solo mountain climber and the goal is just for us to get to the top. But when God saves us, He makes us part of a climbing group. So we're not climbing the mountain as a solo. The goal is not just for us to get to the top. The goal is for all of us to get to the top. And so when I see you struggling, I shouldn't just think, oh, too bad for you, you're going to fall behind. I'm glad it's easier for me. But instead, I should realize, man, I have a responsibility to this person, and I want to get under that burden with them and feel some of the weight. And that means when I come to you, I'm not just going to come, you know, shaking my finger, this is what you need to do, this is what you're doing wrong, and this is what you need to do. I'm going to come wanting really to come alongside of you and be like, okay, how can I help? That's what we want here. And as I do that, of course, I need to be looking to myself and asking, you know what? I need to be careful that I'm not falling into a trap, even as I seek to help you. And that's why Paul will say later, bear one another's burdens, so fulfill the law of Christ. For if anyone thinks he's something when he's nothing, he deceives himself. So, like, be careful. Watch yourself as you go to correct others, that you're not having an inflated view of yourself. And that's obviously easy when you go to correct someone, because usually you're correcting them because you think you know something. And Paul's like, yeah, you might know something, but please be careful, because self-deception is super real. And so you want to correct someone. We need to correct someone instead of gossip. We need to be willing to correct. It's hard, but the Bible does give us instruction how to do it, and a few things that the Bible tells us is we want to do it for the right reason, want to seek to do it at the right time, and we want to do it in the right manner. And part of that is just being really people who are saturated in the gospel, right? Like, we're saved by correction. God corrected us, showed us that we were such sinners, and that the only hope was Jesus Christ. And he's shown us such patience and granted us such forgiveness. So, of course, we value correction, but we also don't go to others as for the final answer, because we know Jesus is.